everybody. I will call this meeting of State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order. Today is March 22nd, 2022. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Mr. Brinks, can you take the roll?
Yes, thank you. Chair Nelson.
Present.
Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson present.
Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Present.
Nash is present. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Bonner is present. Representative Drozdowski.
Present.
Drozdowski is present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins is present. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman is present. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne present.
Cleburne is present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick is present. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Mason is present. Representative New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Pawlowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Quam is present. Chair, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. And the next item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes from the March 18th meeting. Representative Carlson, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes from March 18th, 2022. Everybody wants to unmute. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? With a vote of two, the ayes have it. Members, the next thing on our agenda is the Office of the Legislative Auditor here. We have Ms. Schwartz and Ms. Randall from the office to do the report on the Board of Cosmetology Licensing. And Ms. Schwartz, if you want to introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Laura Schwartz, and I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I'm here to give a just very brief overview of a report that we released last May on licensing by the Board of Cosmetology. Minnesota regulates cosmetology to protect public health and safety, and to that end, state law requires licensing for cosmetology practitioners and establishments. Overall, we found that certain aspects of Minnesota's cosmetology licensing structure do not contribute to public health or safety, but do make licensing more expensive and burdensome for licensees. We made a number of recommendations to simplify the licensing structure or otherwise make it less burdensome for licensees while still protecting public health. The licensing structure for practitioners is organized along two dimensions, level of practice and area of practice. And I believe you have your reports perhaps in front of you. On page 15, our report shows the various areas of practice. For example, a cosmetologist can perform cosmetic services on the hair, skin, and nails, and practitioners with a specialty license can perform services in just one area. For example, a nail technician works just on nails, and an esthetician works just on skin. Page 16 of our report shows the other dimension of the licensing structure, levels of practice. And the four levels include operator, salon manager, school manager, and instructor. Under the current structure, some practitioners have to pay to maintain multiple levels of licensure. For example, a school manager has to pay to maintain a salon manager license, even if they don't work in a salon. We recommended that the legislature allow school manager licenses to supersede underlying licenses. And we had a number of other recommendations to the structure. For example, we recommended repealing the salon manager license, creating a hair-only specialty license, allowing military temporary licenses to be valid for up to 3 years, and allowing a single type of salon license rather than salon licenses that must be differentiated by area of practice. In our evaluation, we also found confusion about the differences in the scopes of practice of cosmetology and barbering, and inconsistencies in how the state regulates these two very similar occupations. And we made a number of recommendations in that area, including allowing reciprocity between cosmetology and barbering credentials, and clarifying whether or not cosmetology practitioners may shave beards, and whether or not barbers may perform waxing services. The full list of our recommendations appears on page 67 of our report, and that is my very brief summary of our report, Mr. Chair. I'm here to answer questions if you have any.
Members, do we have any questions? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, or perhaps Ms. Randall, one of the things that we're hearing regarding a bill that we will be hearing here in just a few minutes is that it would take 18 months to reconfigure training materials to create a hair technician license. Based on, I know when you briefed me that you had done a study of other states and things within our own state, does that number make sense to you? Because it seems exceptionally long to me for something that already exists. So if you would be able to opine on that.
Ms. Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We really didn't look into the logistics of how long it would take to reconfigure the licensing structure.
Representative Nash.
Nothing further.
Any further questions? And members, as was noted, we have a couple of bills up here today that actually three bills that deal touch on this subject. And I think some of the recommendations that from the board are part of these bills. Any further questions? And Representative Nash, you still have your hand up. You said no more questions from you. Okay, thank you. If not, members, thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Thank you, Ms. Randall, for being here today. And we'll move on to our bills then. And if you guys can hang around, you might be needed to answer questions also on the bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is House File 3155 and is Representative Gomez. Are you here?
Mr. Chair, yeah. Hi.
Okay, trying to find you on my screen. Welcome to the committee, Representative Gomez. I'll move House File 3155 to have it before us, and intent is to lay this over. Because there was an amendment that needs to be done, there's a blank appropriation there, and we didn't get an amendment in time to take care of that. But so, Representative Gomez, if you want to explain your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me before the committee. Apologies that I didn't get my amendment in on time. That was my fault. So, House File 3155 establishes the hair-only specialty license that you just heard from the legislative auditor that we should do. So, the fact that under current law, Minnesota requires that a cosmetologist learns to test on nails and skincare in addition to hair, even if they only want to ultimately end up doing hair, presents a burden and a barrier to entry for people. And a burden to actually a barrier to getting licensed, which ultimately we want people who are providing these services to people to get licensed. Other states do have a hair only license. If you have to kind of do training and coursework and evaluation on these three things, hair, nails, and skincare, you have to pay for coursework. That's part of getting a license. You have to undergo testing on, skills that you won't ultimately be applying to your business. So that's the bill. It's pretty simple. It establishes this hair-only license or a license for a hair technician. This bill is moving in the Senate. It has Republican authorship over there, and so I'm just hopeful we can get this over the line. The one thing that I do want to mention is that, I think I share the concern about timeline that Lead Nash just expressed. There is in Section 10, Subdivision 2, which is line 6.7, this does, provide the board the ability to establish the minimum standards of course content and sort of the prep courses that cosmetologists will have to go through and the testing that they will be subject to afterwards. And we don't need that to be, the course material already exists. That portion of the evaluation tool, the test already exists. We don't need to recreate the wheel. We just need to kind of break those chunks off. I'm hopeful that we can work with the board to ensure that it doesn't take too long, and we can remove these burdens for these small business owners in our communities. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple testifiers.
And we have a couple of testifiers. We'll get to those. The first person I have on my list is Ava Garcia, who's presenting for Claudia Jimenez. Ms. Garcia, if you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ava Garcia. First, Claudia was not able to join us today because she was having technical difficulties with her Zoom, but I will be reading her testimony on her behalf. Good morning to all the members of the committee. My name is Claudia Jimenez Hernandez, and I am a single and proud mother of three daughters. My oldest daughter is 25 years old. She is blind from birth and is autistic. I am the only provider for my household. I have a cosmetology manager license and also a license to operate my small business. In 2005, with dreams and significant sacrifice, I was able to open my small beauty salon here in Minneapolis, and I've worked there since. My salon is the breadwinner for my family. I'm a hardworking and responsible woman who pays taxes year after year. Today, I'm asking for your help on behalf of Minnesota hairstylists and small business owners. Unfortunately, current law around cosmetology create many barriers resulting in people not being able to obtain their cosmetology licenses, and it is also very difficult to find out when the laws change. When inspectors show up to our salons, they give us very high fines and they do not want to collaborate with them. In the last 10 years, I have paid more than $18,000 in fines. My salon is on the verge of closing because I cannot find licensed staff to work because the process to obtain a cosmetology license is very expensive and complicated. And since the pandemic, the expenses are more palpable, and not having staff makes it more difficult to make ends meet. One of my daughters wanted to help out in my salon while she was in college and looked into the cost of cosmetology school. The cost is between $15,000 to $25,000, so she decided not to do it. Because she was only going to cut hair, she did not want to do nails or any other service. I think that by removing the barriers and separating the licenses so there are just one for hair, we can help many single mothers like myself, but also many young people could benefit since it could become an alternative to pay for their studies and the state of Minnesota or generate more jobs in different communities. Again, I ask you to help us create alternatives and eliminate the barriers that exist to obtain a license to cut hair. I'm here also to do retaliation from the Board of Cosmetology, but they themselves have told me that to make changes, we have to go through the legislative process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garcia. And we were having trouble with your microphone. I don't know if you need to move closer when you're doing the interpreting for Ms. Klott, but we're getting a lot of fuzzy feedback and it's hard to hear you. Next person I have is Yenny Klotte, or Klott. If you want to introduce yourself or introduce her, and then I understand that it's going to be, her testimony is going to be translated by Ms. Garcia also. Ms. Klott?
Yes, good morning. Okay. Buenos días a todos los miembros del comité. Mi nombre es Jenny Klotte. Llegué a Estados Unidos hace 17 años junto con mi hijo desde Colombia. En Colombia estudié la profesión de estilista y por algunos años tuve la oportunidad de trabajar en mi propio salón. Cuando llegué a Minnesota, aprendí que para poder trabajar en el estado debería tener una licencia de cosmetología y que la experiencia de más de 10 años que ya tenía no era suficiente para poder trabajar aquí. Con mucho esfuerzo y dedicación logré tener mi licencia de operadora y después la de manager. Ya cuando tuve mi licencia de manager, con mucho sacrificio, decidí comprar un salón de belleza aquí en Minneapolis, el cual lo tuve por 2 años. Tristemente lo tuve que vender después de 2 años debido a que perdí mis ahorros porque no podía mantener la renta y lo difícil que era contratar personal con licencia, y al no tener personal, pues fue muy difícil generar ganancias. Encima de esto, la mesa de cosmetología hacía demasiadas inspecciones. Eso me hizo vender el salón porque no podía con el estrés y tampoco podría generar ingresos para pagar la renta del salón o de mi propia vivienda. Ahora trabajo rentando en un salón la silla y me doy cuenta de que las multas que reciben los dueños son elevadas. Lidiar con la mesa de cosmetología me causó estrés emocional. Mi salud se vio afectada, también mis finanzas. Así que ese fue el motivo principal que me hizo que vendiera mi salón, costándome más de $25,000 de pérdidas. Una de las barreras más grandes para obtener una licencia de cosmetología es que en este estado tenemos que estudiar y pasar el examen de uñas y cuidado de piel si queremos cortar cabello. También cada que tenemos que renovar nuestra licencia, tenemos que tomar cursos de refrescamiento. Y eso es absolutamente innecesario, ya que todos los que trabajamos en esta área practicamos nuestras habilidades diariamente. Creo que esto debería de ser opcional, ya que a veces no tenemos los recursos para pagar tan costosos cursos. Ahora, durante la pandemia, la mesa de cosmetología no nos dio ningún alivio. No pensó en lo afectadas que fuimos. Aún así, para las que nos tocó renovar la licencia, tuvimos que pagar para la renovación y además el curso de refrescamiento. Mi pregunta es, ¿por qué la mesa de cosmetología, en vez de trabajar de la mano con nosotros, nos dificultan las cosas? Me gustaría volver a tener mi salón de belleza nuevamente, pero sé que es muy difícil encontrar personas con licencia, ya que y la mesa de cosmetología parece que añade barreras para que las personas puedan sacar su licencia. Conozco personas que han tratado de sacar su licencia, pero no pueden porque el examen es muy complejo. Hay madres trabajadoras como yo que les gustaría tener una oportunidad de trabajar en un salón cortando cabello para poder sostener a sus familias. Así que sería muy bueno que existiera una licencia solamente para cortar y teñir cabello. Pedimos alternativas que eliminen las barreras para poder tener una licencia para cortar cabello y que más personas puedan trabajar con respeto y dignidad. Muchas gracias.
Ms. García, are you going to translate that? Thank you.
Yes, can you hear me a little bit better now?
A little bit, but it's still fuzzy, but do your best.
Okay. Good morning to all members of the committee. My name is Jenny Kutnit, and I came to the United States 17 years ago with my son from Colombia. In Colombia, I studied the profession of hairstylist, and for a few years, I had the opportunity to work on my own salon. When I arrived in Minnesota, I learned that in order to work in the state, I would have to have a cosmetology license, and that the 10 plus years of experience I already had were not valid enough to be able to work. With a lot of effort and dedication, I managed to get my operator's license and then my manager's license. When I got my manager's license, with a lot of sacrifice, I decided to buy a beauty salon here in Minneapolis, which I had for 2 years. Sadly, I had to sell it after 2 years, losing my savings because I couldn't maintain the rent and how difficult it was to hire licensed staff. And the lack of staff made it very difficult to generate profit. Additionally, the Board of Cosmetology Inspectors showed up constantly. They made me sell my salon because I couldn't deal. That made me sell my salon because I couldn't deal with the stress and I couldn't generate income to pay the rent for the salon or my own home. Now I work renting a chair in a salon and I realize that the fines received by the owners are very high. Dealing with the Board of Cosmetology has brought on emotional stress. My health took a hit, and so did my finances. Again, that was the main reason I had to sell my salon, costing me over $25,000 in losses. One of the biggest barriers to getting a cosmetology license is that in this state, we have to study and pass the nail and skincare exam if we want to cut hair. Also, every time we have to renew our license, we have to take a refresher course and this is absolutely unnecessary since those of us who work in this area practice our skills daily. I think this should be optional, as sometimes we don't have the resources to pay for such expensive courses. Now, during the pandemic, the Board of Cosmetology did not give us any relief. They did not think about how effective we were, and even so, for those of us who had to renew the license, we had to pay the renewal and also the refresher course. My question is, why does the Board of Cosmetology, instead of working hand in hand with us, make things difficult for us? I would like to have my beauty salon again, but I know that it is very difficult to find licensed cosmetologists, and the Board of Cosmetology seems to add barriers for people to get their license. I know people who have tried to get their license, but can't because the exam is very complex. There are working mothers like me who would like the opportunity to work in the salon, cutting hair in order to support their families. And it would be very helpful if there was a license to just cut hair and color hair. We ask for alternatives that eliminate the barriers in order to have access to a license that allows us to cut hair and that more people can work with respect and dignity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Klott. I have somebody here to answer questions, Mr. Iglesias. I hope I didn't butcher that too badly. And with that, members, are there any questions out there? Questions of the author? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe, I don't know if we have a testifier to help with this. I'm curious, how long have we had a Board of Cosmetology in the state, and why do we have it? Why do we have cosmetology licensing?
Ms. Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Under the law, we regulate cosmetology to protect public health and safety. As we talk about in the report, cosmetology practitioners use a lot of chemicals. They have sharp implements near your skin, near your face. So we do it to protect public health and safety. We do have a timeline. I believe it's in Chapter 4 about the history of cosmetology. It's on page 53, and Minnesota started regulating barbers in 1897, and in 1927, Minnesota established the precursor to the Board of Cosmetology.
So, Representative Druskowski, right about the year you were born, 1897.
Yeah, the year right after you were born, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Or maybe you were after me. Well, Representative Gomez, thanks for bringing this fix. You know, we have government, we always try to calculate government and engineer it to, we think it's saving people. And so I wonder why we even do this and interfere with these business owners that we've heard from, where government's interfering with their ability to operate. We think we're going to reconfigure the deck chairs on the Titanic, and the reality is we run into another storm in another day, and it's still a problem. This isn't the solution I would have. I would actually get rid of the Board of Cosmetology and the licensing. I don't know about the safety concerns. I think the marketplace should be able to operate here, and good people and good business owners can operate. Instead, we have another classic fencing type structure here that is placed in front of us by government, and it's causing problems for our business owners. But I will ponder as we go along, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gomez, thank you again. If we're going to operate within the confines of all this regulation and government that we do have, your bill is certainly a reasonable one to try to figure out within those confines how to make it work for these poor business owners that are being smoked by government. I would rather just get rid of this and get government out of their way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of my favorite topics to talk about is the Board of Cosmetology. No cookies for class today since we're not in person, but So Representative Gomez, question for you. First, I fully support this bill. I think it's a really solid bill, and I have helped and led on projects like this in years past. You had commented, and then I'm going to ask Ms. Fast to testify on this as well, but you had commented on, and I had said as well, the length of 18 months to do this. In preparing for this and preparing for your bill, did you get any information as to why 18 months is the proposed number?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Lead Nash. I have not heard what the reason was for that timeline, no.
And Representative Nash, Ms. Fast is here. We can, Ms. Fast, who's the, if you want to introduce yourself for the record, and you can answer the question.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative Nash. I think there's a few different components that go that maybe have led to the idea of a January 1 of 2024. I think there's different ways to combat it. I think the board is hesitant to bring forward any expedited rulemaking in statutory language. I think legislators sometimes tend to shy away from expedited rulemaking, but I do think that there might be a solution to provide that. The rulemaking manual sets out the process that it would take to write the rules after the statute is passed. I think a third component is the risk of violating state law if the board was not able to produce the license upon a date such as July 1 of 2022, depending on if session ends on time, the risk of not being able to actually issue the license. I would say our attorney general, I don't want to speak for them, but even though it's permitted in statute to issue the license, they would advise that rules need to be drafted behind it. I think another solution, we also have the technology changes. We don't have the license in our database right now. We would need to develop that license in the database. But I also think, as I was pondering the feedback, is maybe Representative Gomez and I could look at a solution for, I think there's maybe two different tiers here. We have individuals who have, as the testifiers, who have done the education in another country and are ready to go. So perhaps there is statutory language that could direct the board to navigate those individuals through the licensing process quicker and give us direction on how to issue them. And then I think there's the individuals who are maybe in 11th grade right now that are going through high school that when they get out, they want to become a hairstylist only. And feedback from our schools, it will take, you know, like a minuscule school, which is not every school by any stretch of the imagination, it will take them at least a year, if not longer, to develop the program, because when they create a program, they have to go through a process. So I think there's two tiers. I think there's the individuals who have already have the experience, may need to test and get the license. And then we have those that the program at the school to offer it to new unlicensed, not educated. So I think there's a lot of factors. I don't think it's a hard and fast date, but I think the risk is, and if you don't want the date that's been suggested, that, you know, we can keep the committee apprised of how things are moving along. So I just think there's several factors that the legislature will have to decide on how to best advise the board on it.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was a lot of words that didn't really tell me a lot about what I want. I'll just point out to the committee, the collapse of the I-35 bridge and its replacement took less time than the cosmetology board is proposing to create a license for something that they already have the training manuals for, the requirements for. They have all of this today. So you can build a bridge in less time than they are proposing it takes to do this. And I think that some of what is going on here is just a dropping of the plow. And since we all have served on the floor. We all know what dropping the plow means. We're just trying to slow something down. And I am very frustrated with the lack of initiative and the hand-wringing of all of this that I've had from the Cosmetology Board for years. 4 years we have heard when we were talking about eyelash extensions, about the horrible dangers of all of that and how it would take so long to study. And now with this, what we're hearing is that effectively, and this is my interpretation, is that the Cosmetology Board is anti-business, anti-women-owned business, because those are the people who are opening these businesses. And I am just sick and tired of all of this. You know, we heard from Ms. Fast that she doesn't want to use expedited rulemaking. Well, I got to tell you, that's the first time I've ever heard anybody at any agency not rush towards expedited rulemaking with open arms. So, you know, I had told Representative Gomez that I want the appropriation piece to come forward as an amendment. I wish we had it here today because I would be happy to vote for this bill. This bill will enable people to create their own business. And as somebody who has opened my own business before, there is something really satisfying about that. And it gives you a sense of accomplishment, a sense of stability, and you're just trying to make that incredibly difficult, all with a little bit of glitz and glamour about safety and so on. You've already got the training manuals for this. So while I'm frustrated, I would vote for this bill if it was here. I think Representative Druskowski is on the right track of getting rid of the Cosmetology Board, or at least some components or people on the board. But Representative Gomez, I like the bill. I think that this is very much a jobs bill. And one question for you before I'm done, Mr. Chair. Representative Gomez, how many jobs do you think this would create based on your interaction with people in the communities that you represent and other people who have reached out to you? How many new businesses do you estimate would be created out of this bill passing into law?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Lead Nash. Unfortunately, I don't think that it's really possible based on, you know, anecdotal interactions with people to come up with an estimate of how many jobs will be created by this effort. You know, I will say, though, that in my conversations with constituents, you know, I mean, I think you heard very clearly in my testimony the kind of barriers that they're experiencing. And so certainly, you know, it will have a positive impact on, you know, the economic vitality of my community and hopefully of many other communities across the state.
Representative Nash, I see Ms. Fast has put her hand up. Maybe she wants to answer. Ms. Fast.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I'm not opposed at all. I want to make it clear to expedited rulemaking. I think I did not feel it was appropriate for the board to potentially put it in their own packet. I was attempting to give Representative Gomez solutions. I also think that you made some very sweeping allegations about the board and not wanting to or to hampering the ability for people to work. I think let's not forget that since I've been the director, the board has had interest in this bill. And we had always been told behind the scenes that the barber board must agree to a hair tech only bill before anything can happen. And I think the OLA pointed that out in the report. So this is something the board has wanted for years. But the obstacles were not the Board of Cosmetology.
And members, we've got the Mason bill, which deals with it with the Board of Cosmetology. I hope we don't have to go over all these same questions for that bill, because this piece is also in the Mason's bill, which is the bill that came from the Board of Cosmetology dealing with the OLA report. So, Representative Nash, are you done? And can we move on to the next? Thank you. Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate this bill as well, Representative Gomez. Can you just clarify a little bit of your intentions with an amendment that, you know, I share with you a little bit of fault that we had talked previously about bringing forth an amendment, and we didn't get it submitted in time or actually drafted or something, but can you share with us so that we can feel comfortable voting for this bill what your intentions are with an amendment at the next stop at Ways and Means?
Representative Gomez, and members, we're laying this over for possible inclusion or for possibly passing it out later. So let Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Koznick. As the chair noted, this is going to be held over here, so we would be looking at probably amending during markup, I would assume, of your big bill. I am open to, you know, you and I have spoken, Representative Koznick, and I would love us to collaborate on an amendment moving forward that meets the intent of this bill, which is just, you know, to remove barriers for business owners and make this easier for folks, and also, you know, aligns with the goals that we also share about making sure that this happens, you know, rapidly and with as little bureaucratic machinations as possible. So, you know, so let's keep talking about that. We have a little bit of time before markup, and so I'm hopeful that we can come to something that is agreeable to all of us.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your sentiments, Representative Gomez. I was looking for a little bit more specifics to what we were hoping to have as an amendment prepared would be something in the lines dealing with Section 10 that diminishes the ability of the board to apply new rulemaking, and then Section 11, as Representative Nash also alluded to, we feel that the board can just absorb this and doesn't need additional appropriation. So that's what my intent with amendments will be. We'll share that with you, and I hope that's agreeable to the author. And then just to kind of wrap it up, you know, I think we see this throughout a lot of state government is industries creating more barriers to entry and kind of protecting their turf. You know, I used to have my real estate license and was involved in the Realtors Association, government affairs and stuff before I became here. And it seemed like we, as industries, a lot of times try to create barriers of entry in a lot of these industries, and it's unfortunate. So I appreciate what you're trying to do with this bill in terms of lowering or more tailoring the licenses to something that people want to do and not make it more burdensome by having other areas be required to be licensed in that they don't anticipate using. So I think it's appropriate to do that. And I think, you know, I'd like to see more of these types of bills to reduce the regulations so that people can reach their full potential, create their own opportunities. And in this case, very much so for the future of Minnesotans and many new Americans. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, and we'll look forward to offering some suggestions as we proceed with this bill. Thank you.
And members, that's the line we have to walk with regulations and allowing people to do work is the health and safety issues. You want an electrician to be licensed so that they know the codes and they know how to do it, because you don't want someone to wire a house and then have it burned down because it was done improperly. I think that's the line we have to walk when we do regulations, that you want to make sure that the health and safety of the public. And as you pointed out, Representative Koznick, with the real estate license, you want to make sure that they're not ripping people off and they're selling people's houses. And so, like I said, that's the line we walk with regulation and all the time. Representative Quam, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. In high school, I first became aware of comparable items for women and men. The women's items cost more. So I'm wondering, is it easier or less costly to get a barber's license to cut people's hairs? And, barbers do some coloring and and some other things too. So is that a quicker and less expensive way to go?
I see Ms. Fast has put her hand up. I also have Ms. Scholin here from House Research that maybe she can answer, help with that question. But Ms. Fast.
Mr. Chair, it was to the author that I asked the question.
Representative
Thank
Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Quam. I would like to have Ms. Fast or Ms. Scholin answer your question, if that's okay.
That's what I figured. Certainly. Ms. Fast, if you want to take a short stab at it, and we don't need a five-minute dissertation.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nelson. The bill that Representative Gomez is proposing will likely be less a number of hours. It actually should be less than a barber. A barber's at 1,500 hours right now, and a full cosmetology is at 1,550. So we anticipate this license coming in potentially in that 1,000-ish hours. We need public input on that. And the fees, to answer your questions about the fees, the average cosmetology renewal fee on an annual basis is $43.33, and the annual cost for a barber renewal is $80. So cosmetology is significantly below a barber.
Ms. Schwartz, I see you have your hand up. We want to give some information.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Quam. On page 61 of our report, we point out some of the differences and similarities between cosmetology and barbering. And the last chapter of the report discusses the differences more.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a reason why there's so many different variations of cosmetology? You know, I like the intent of the bill. However, it just seems that we're adding more complexity and more variety of licenses to the area. Is this, how do other states, do they have what is being proposed in this bill? And how has that worked out?
Ms. Schwartz, did you look at that when you did your report, your investigation?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to have my hand raised.
Ms. Fast, you got your hand back up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nelson. It is our understanding right now that about nine states offer the hair technician only license. And if you want to call it a building block fundamental, that is becoming more, I don't want to say trend, but more advantageous as individuals want to find the most direct path to what they want to do and then add on from there. And I think you will see in the bill later in Mason, there's a work group established to reevaluate the cosmetology structure. So Representative Quam, it might feel like more is happening, but I think that is the wishes of the public, is to not limit individuals to do multiple things if they really only want to do one thing, which, as you might remember, is the eyelash technician. That was a license that was sought out by someone in the public, went to a legislator, and it passed through the legislative process. So there is more of a building block type of field that is continuing to evolve throughout the states.
Representative Quam. I see your hand is down. With that, Representative Gomez, if you want to briefly wrap up, and then we'll lay this over and we'll get on to the next bill dealing with cosmetology. Representative Gomez.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for a good discussion today. I do want to lift up, you know, that some of the testimony that you heard from Claudia and from Jenny. I've been working especially with Claudia over many years. And, I think we really do need to address some of the issues that they brought up in terms of the way that we're doing kind of enforcement and inspections in this sector, because, you know, these folks are seeing the inspectors with great frequency related to how many there are for the entire state. So, you know, I just wanted to bring that to this committee's attention, because I know this is in your in your purview. But, you know, this is it's a good bill. It's a bipartisan bill, and I'm hopeful that that we can move it forward. And I just want to say thank you to the testifiers. Gracias a Jenny para estar con nosotros hoy. Agradecemos su testimonio mucho. And so thank you for being with us. And I hope that members will support the bill. Look forward to continuing work on it.
And with that, members, we're going to lay this bill over. Our next bill on the agenda, thank you, Representative Gomez. Our next bill on our agenda is House File 4390, Representative Mason. And the intent is to pass this and move this on to the general register. Hopefully we don't take as long on this bill, otherwise we're going to be coming, have to come back and move these, some of these bills to Thursday night, and that may be a long night for us members if we continue down this path. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 4390. And I am Representative Sandra Mason. I represent 51A. We've got quite a background already on the bill. As was told, most of this bill is trying to address the recommendations of the OLA report. And it does create a hair technician license. It does add two members to the board, including one advanced practice esthetician and one hair technician. It reduces the number of paid licenses a person is required to hold. It establishes a working group to study the licensing structure. I do want to add a couple of personal comments, especially since most of our questions came from men. I've never actually had work done in a barbershop. Usually I've gone to a salon, but I do see a lot of men now using the salon. So the distinctions between the salon and the barbershop, I'm finding a little bit, well, more than interesting right now. But I do want to mention, years ago, I had a permanent, and again, this involves using chemicals. It was awful. I had to have my hair cut off because of the horrible job that was done on me. So when I go someplace, I do expect that the people are familiar with the use of chemicals, et cetera. So that is my personal editorializing right now. And what I would like to do is ask the executive director of the Minnesota Cosmetology Board of Cosmetology to maybe take questions and add, if she has some additional comments to add as well.
And members, as she pointed out, this bill came from the Board of Cosmetology, and it's an answer. It's my understanding, and Ms. Fast can either confirm or deny that, but it's my understanding it's this comes out of the suggestions from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Ms. Fast, do you want to again introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. I'm Gina Fast, the Executive Director. And I will go really through the different sections, if that's what you would like, relatively quickly.
That would be good.
Yep. And the genesis of the bill was from conversations with the House and the Senate of priorities for this legislative session. The OLA report gives several recommendations and options, and these were the ones that were listed as a priority for the 2022 session. So the first section one is, as Representative Mason outlined, is adding two members to the board. Section two is adding the hair technician to the manager section. Section three is reducing the number of paid licenses a person is required to hold. Section four is just updating the practitioner definition. Section five is adding the hair technician license definition. The one thing I would point out, the only big it's not a big difference, but the difference between Representative Gomez's bill and this bill is if you look on line 3.9, The hair technician in our bill is referred to as the hair on the scalp only. So a hair technician would not be able to do any hair services in other areas of the body. Section six is removing the, I just gotta get to the right page because it goes on here a little bit. It's removing only the fee for the temporary military. We get so few of them. And later on, you will see in section eight, it aligns the temporary military permit with the license cycle. So instead of a 1 year permit, it would be a 3 year permit issued once. We've maybe issued one or two in the lifetime of the military being authorized in statute. Okay, so section seven is updating, again, just is a definition. I just talked about section eight. Section nine is giving the board direction on how to sync up the licenses that are going to be issued as discussed in section three. So it allows us to sync individuals up. Section 10 is updating locations where the word hair technician is needed. Section 11, this is going to allow the board to adopt rules to give barbers credit in cosmetology. And my understanding later today, you will have the barber board giving a similar statutory language, allowing cosmetologists to come into barbering. Section 12 is just updating locations where the word hair technician is needed. Section 13 is updating the language to the single salon license. Section 14 is just updating the correct licenses in those in that section. Section 15, 16, and 17 is updating housekeeping updates regarding schools. Section 18, this is establishing a working group to evaluate several provisions of the OLA report, in particular, how the salon manager license and school manager license should be structured, if at all, continuing to be issued. Evaluating the scope for the special events permit and homebound permits, and evaluating an endorsement-based licensure. Section 19, which I think was potentially what was trying to be discussed earlier, this is the appropriation estimated for the revenue collection for hair technicians in the future. We did get numbers of hair technicians in other states. So we did a percentage base. It's between roughly 1% and 3% of total licensure. And then section 20 is a revisor instruction to reflect the naming convention of the board. And that is what I have.
And members, I don't know if Representative Mason said this, but the intent is, I think the motion was to refer this to Ways and Means because there is an appropriation in it. Representative Mason, do you have any other comments before we go to questions?
None, sir. I think we've had a lot of questions, so we'll just continue with that. Thank you.
Any questions for Representative Mason's bill? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the question would be for the individual who just talked from the cosmetology board.
Ms. Fast.
It was evident in the bill that there's the need to sync up or have somebody who has multiple licenses try to coordinate them. How many licenses do people hold? Mr. Chair, I'm not very familiar with this board, and I'm reading the report and trying to learn more here. But holy moly, how many licenses does an individual carry?
This
under
fast.
This board.
It's fast.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The board has over 32,000 licensees, and a very small percentage of them, it would be probably, I think it's less than 500, or maybe it's even 300. So individuals have a practitioner license, and then if they want to be an instructor, we have 32 schools. Individuals were holding a practitioner license and an instructor license, occasionally a school manager license, which would be at max 32. So it's a small amount, and I think there's a lot of history in the old rules that were produced in 1983 that resulted in the structure that exists in the holding of the licenses and how to get licenses back. And so I think that that's what this is addressing. And so the syncing up of the license will allow the board to issue a practitioner license. So if an instructor does want to work in a salon and teach, they would get the same license at the same time with the second one auto issued at the same time. It's a pretty small percent of individuals. I mean, it does exist, and I don't want to diminish that for those that it does exist for, but this is what is addressing the OLA recommendation, with potential further recommendations of a complete licensing structure overhaul to come after a working group if this bill were to pass.
So, Mr. Chair,
Driscoll.
So, thank you, Ms. Fast. So, I don't know if I missed it, but how many total licenses, different types of license categories, do you issue?
Ms. Fast, I think that's what I heard in his first questions. How many different licenses do you have?
Chair Nelson and Representative Drakowski, the board has. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head. Roughly, it has four types of licenses a person can hold: a practitioner, a manager's license. You wouldn't hold both of those. A school manager, which there's very few of those, and then an instructor license. And then within each of those categories, because the board regulates several types of professions within cosmetology, we'd have cosmetology, we would have nail technology, you'd have aesthetics, and then you would have eyelash technicians with the potential of hair technology. Someone holding all of those is extremely unlikely. You generally wouldn't hold a cosmetology, and then we have advanced practice. I probably could like email you, and I think Laura popped on because she might actually have it in a chart in her report. Because it's too layered, as she mentioned. It's the field in which you're choosing to be licensed, and then the layer of the license.
Ms. Schwartz,
do you want to
add? Lend some light.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll. On page 25, we've got an exhibit that kind of outlines what the structure currently is and then what we're recommending for a simplified structure. Page 16 and 15 and 16 also describe the structure.
Representative Skowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Schwartz and Ms. Fast. You validated my understanding of what we have here. We've got a great big mess. And Representative Mason, I agree with you. Why should we have different categories of licenses for barbers and cosmetologists and based on whether they're women or men? If we're going to have this government, which I don't think this piece of government is even necessary, but if we're going to have it, it should be simple and it should be easy. And we don't have simple going on here. We've got a very complex, cumbersome, expensive structure for business owners to try to navigate here. And I don't see us going in that direction right now. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Schwartz and Ms. Bass.
Thank you, Representative Skowski. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the members and our testifiers today, thank you. I just want to say thank you to the OLA for the report. It was comprehensive and very clear, and I think it gives us a good place to move forward. And to Ms. Bast, I would like to say, I'm excited to see what these stackable credentials may look like for the practitioners in Minnesota. and to streamline this process so that people can start with one and then add as they want to grow their business. And to the committee, I just want to remind us all that licenses are two things. They protect the public, but they also protect the practitioner. They give the practitioner a way of saying, I am skilled and I am trained, and it helps them to be the best in their practice and to build a profession. So to the chair's comments earlier about an electrician, when I receive services and I know that someone has a certificate or a specialized training in that profession, I am much more confident and I'm much more willing to pay them the value that they have earned. And so I just want to remind us that it is a two-pronged thing, both public safety and protecting the practitioner. So that's, thank you all for the work that you're doing, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this task force works. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. Any further questions? If not, Representative Mason, if you want a brief closing and then renew your motion.
Okay. Thank you very much for the discussion. I think this bill is an attempt to clarify and update the way the cosmetology industry is working. I'd appreciate your support for this. And again, from a personal standpoint, when I'm going into these salons, I'm expecting that people are familiar with the various chemicals, et cetera, that are being used and a whole lot of other things because they are touching your body. So I find some of the comments inappropriate. And I think, as I said, we can make changes along the way, but House File 4390 is an attempt to upgrade the way our current situation is. I would appreciate member support. I move House File 4390 to Ways and Means. And again, thank you for your support.
And Representative Mason renews her motion that House File 4390.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I said it wrong.
Okay.
House File 4390 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Brings, will you please take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Nash votes aye. Representative Bonner.
Bonner votes aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Drazkowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Claiborne.
Claiborne aye.
Claiborne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam votes nay. Chair with a vote of 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. The bill's on its way to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson, if you want to take the gavel, the next bill on the agenda is House File 3986.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nelson. House File 3986. Chair Nelson, I see you have an A1 amendment, an author's amendment. Do you want to start with that?
Yes, members, and we... The amendment is the A1 amendment, and what this does is, out of conversations that were had and hours that the part about cosmetologists getting credit for hours, it just takes inserts of study, which is the discretion of the board, has curriculum requirements that are equivalent to the requirements in Section 154.07, which is basically the requirements for the barber board. When we're giving credit for hours, we want to make sure that if people coming from other states that are coming here or coming from other countries coming here, that they have, if they have the license already, that it matches up with what our requirements are. And that's all it does, members.
Okay.
And I'll move the A1 amendment First, I'll move House File 3986 to be hit, and it appeals to be laid over as a possible vehicle, and I'll move the A1 amendment.
Wonderful. Chair Nelson moves House File 3986 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Also moves the,
move the A1 amendment for right
moves
now.
Moves the yeah. A1 amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. So, Chair Nelson, to your bill.
And members, we heard this earlier, and we didn't have the amendment, but basically what this does is it's clean up for the Board of Barbers. The big things it does is, like I said last time, is that it eliminates the requirement that a union journeyman barber be appointed to the board from the Professional Barbers Association. The Barbers Union, the Barbers Professional Statewide Association no longer exists, so they're removing that requirement for a person to be put to the board. It adds, the big piece that it adds is something that's been talked about for a few years, is the mobile barbershop provision, and it's got schedules around licensing of those, and inspections of those, and definitions of those, and how those are to be set up. Clarifies that facial waxing is not barbering, and determines that puts definitions in for barbering or for waxing and straight razor so that there's definition there. And again, some of these came out of the OLA report. Removes the 10 grades of schooling, or 10th grade, having to reach the 10th grade to be kind of in the barber's board. That's old language. We're eliminating and replacing with person has to be at least 17. Amends the barber license exam so that exams have to be offered 4 to 6 times each year. Allows board-approved provider to administer exams. Removes certain education requirements for applicants. Again, that's the 10th grade, moving to age 17. Specifies the components of the practical exam and portions, and sets the process up for individual who fail the test to be able to retake the test without having to go back and take more schooling. And basically, that's it. There's a fiscal impact to this, but it's minor, and it's again, that's the bill. And again, I stand for questions. And Mr. Chair,
thank you, Chair Nelson. I see you also have a testifier, Mr. Grabanowski. Would you like to proceed with your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Representative Nelson did an excellent job explaining the bill. I'll just go over it super fast. I know we're probably behind schedule here. My name is Brent Grabanowski. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Barber Examiners. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to explain this file. This bill addresses 5 major things in barber rule and statute. The first two were recommended from the OLA. This bill establishes a process where licensed cosmetologists can be credited with up to 1,000 hours of their training and study to become a barber through reciprocity. Secondly, it looks to better define the differences between barbering and cosmetology. It defines straight razor shaving as a barber service and states that the procedure of waxing is not in the scope of practice for a barber. The bill also addresses registered barber examinations. It removes onerous requirements for barber students who fail the exam, and it provides the board with additional flexibility in offering more frequent examinations to get barber students working in their chosen field more quickly. It also establishes definitions, fees, and provisions for mobile barbershops, which allow barbers to safely practice their trade outside of barbershops, and allows barbers to reach customers who may be homebound or may simply lack a brick-and-mortar shop in their community. Lastly, this bill eliminates requirements for board member appointments that are outdated. Thank you for your time. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Grabanowski. Appreciate your testimony today. Member questions. Representative Drazkowski, you got your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice in the bill that the bill increases the fee for mobile barbershops, and I'm reading about mobile barbershops, so we put all kinds of regulations on those people and tell them they have to have a bathroom in their mobile barbershop for the half hour or hour that somebody might spend there, which I think is ridiculous. But why are we charging more people more and kind of breaking out this new category of mobile barbershops in licensing requirements? So do people in the mobile barbershop cut hair any differently than somebody in a fixed barbershop?
Perhaps Mr. Grabanowski would like to address that.
Yes, Representative Joukowsky. The fee is higher, and the fees are in the bill because it's establishing fee for barbershops. We didn't increase any fees, but the fees are higher because of the tracking we have to do for mobile barbershops. For a regular barbershop, if we need to inspect it, we know where it's at because they're required to provide us with the address and we can show up at any time. Mobile barbershops have to let us know where they're going to be operating each month so that we're able to do inspections. So that's increased staff time to track that. And the initial barbershop, like you say, there's a lot of rules involving how they have to set up their barbershop. So there'll be additional cost in us reviewing these applications and making sure that they comply with statute and rule.
Mr. Chair Nelson.
And again, we're establishing mobile barbershops. Currently, they are not permitted in our state. This is something that has been asked for by in the past few years by different people have come forward. This is establishing rules for that. So similar to the rules that are for stationary barbershops so that they can take, again, the health and sanitation that are issues that are required by barbershops that in a fixed shop, they're there. In a mobile shop, they want to make sure that we have those same standards and safety standards for the mobile barbershops.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Representative Draskowski, I see you still have your hand up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think I'm about finished here, but I'll tell you, the propensity for government to grow, or we're adding new fee categories in this bill. That's not what was just testified to, but we're adding new language for mobile barbershops and a huge fee for them compared to fixed barbershops. This seems to be creative revenue generation. I think you cut the hair and apply the chemicals, Mr. Chair, the same in a mobile barbershop as you would in a fixed barbershop. And it was testified just to us now that the agency wants more money for those fees so they can go chase people around Minnesota. I'm struggling with this whole area. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Further member questions? All right. I am seeing none. So I'll lay over House File.
Oh, Representative, can I wrap up?
Oh, I'm sorry. Chair Nelson, would you like to close out your bill?
And again, members, this bill was brought to us by the Barber Board. Again, it's updating their statute, updating their language, and adding the mobile barbershops that have been asked for by numerous people in the past few years and coming up with a way to institute those and make sure they're safe for the public. And so, members, that's the bill, and hopefully we'll support it when it finally moves out of committee. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. So with that, I'll lay over House File 3986 as amended and turn the gavel back over to Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Members, the last bill we have on our agenda is House File 284. Representative Freiberg, and I understand Representative Freiberg and Representative Fisher, who's carried this bill in the past, are going to co-present the bill. Welcome to our committee. I will move House File 284 to be moved to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I understand there's an amendment. Representative Freiberg.
Yes, thank you. The A2 amendment updates the dates in the bill, and it also incorporates feedback from tribal groups who requested that the task force include a member of the Dakota community as well as a member of the Ojibwe community. So, Mr. Chair, I would ask that you move the A2 amendment.
I'll move the A2 amendment to put the bill in the order that the author wants. Members, if you want to unmute. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Freiberg, if you want to, you and Representative Fisher want to go.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So both Representative Fisher and I have worked on variations of this bill for a few years. When I chaired government operations during the previous biennium, Representative Fisher brought a bill forward that would create a task force that would look at a new design for the state flag. He had very compelling testimony from students who pointed out issues with the flag that he will describe in more detail. I thought discussions of the flag were intertwined with discussions related to the state seal, since state law requires that the seal be displayed on the flag. The state seal has imagery on it that is a problem, to put it charitably. There was a commentary in the Star Tribune a couple of years ago that quoted a history professor from Duke, and it described the issues with the seal well. It said that the seal, quote, shows a white farmer behind a plow tilling the soil. He's looking up to watch an Indian ride away on a horse. In the original, he's literally riding into the sunset. The Indian looks back at the white man. As far as you can tell, he's leaving willingly. This is not an attempt to honor our heritage or history, but to erase it, unquote. The Secretary of State's office is essentially the keeper of the state seal, and I've spoken with Secretary Simon about this legislation, and he's supportive. Further, he has had discussions with the representatives of the 11 sovereign tribes that share geography with Minnesota, and I've reached out to them as well. The bill would create a state emblems commission charged with making recommendations to the legislature on new designs for the state flag and seal. The commission would consist of members appointed by the governor and the legislature, as well as members of the state's ethnic councils. The bill would also sunset the current flag and seal design. Mississippi recently changed its state flag, and the bill was drafted with that process in mind. So if they can do it, we can as well, and I'd like to turn it over to Representative Fisher.
Welcome to committee, Representative Fisher, if you want to proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for the opportunity to help co-present on House File 284. The section that I'm talking about will have to do with the state flag. The issue was brought to me back in 2017 when two high school students, Mr. Jack Clackman and Mr. Thomas Atkins, had written to me about concerns about our state flag. Some of the concerns that they had brought up to me is that the current state flag is poorly designed and looks like 20 other state flags. They went on to present a long testimony to me and a lot of information about what a good state flag would look like. It was compelling enough that Almanac at the Capitol did a presentation on this, and I did send everyone in the committee a link to that presentation because it can go into it a little bit more in depth than I can. But I will quickly summarize some of the things that they were bringing up in the process is that when you design a flag, you want to keep it simple so that a child can draw it from memory. An example of that would be the United States state flag. You take a look at it. It's got three colors on it, red, white, and blue. You've got the 50 stars and 13 stripes. Anyone can draw that. It's got to use meaningful symbolism. Should use only a couple of colors. There should be no lettering or seals because you get too much detail on it. And from a distance, people can't tell what the flag looks like. And that's one of the problems with our state flag is with the state seal on it, when you've got it high up and several hundred feet away, it looks like the flags of 20 other states. And it's got to be distinctive. The flag is also seen as a strong symbol. There are communities that have developed flags that are well known. Example, the city of Chicago has a white flag with blue stars on it. That people from that area recognize very clearly as being for the state, or excuse me, from the city of Chicago. Some of the things that it is very important for us to keep in mind as we're going through designing the flag is making sure that it has things that are unique to us that are easily understood. It can emphasize the beauty of Minnesota state land. It can identify some of our heritage, our identity as the North Star State are some of the options. Mr. Thomas Atkins had also submitted written testimony, and part of that written testimony had some presentations showing different kinds of flags out there. We've got a very creative community, and some of the samples that he presented were samples of what a state flag could potentially look like, and that is just the tip of the iceberg. I think that by creating a commission that could take a look at
the state flag design from across our state, involving possibilities. We could come up with a very unique design that is that people would be able to see, draw from memory, and when others see it from other parts of the country, would be able to recognize, ah, that is the state of Minnesota. And as a result, this is one of the reasons I'm pushing it forward. And I want to say thank you to a couple of high school students who started up me on this pack back in 2017.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Question, members. Questions. Seeing no questions, no hands popping up, I'll renew my motion that House File 284, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Mr. Brinks, can you take the roll?
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson votes aye. Representative Nash.
No.
Nash votes nay. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner votes aye. Representative Joskowski.
No.
Joskowski votes nay. Representative Elkins.
Elkins aye.
Elkins votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne aye.
Cleburne votes aye. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick votes nay. Representative Mason.
Mason aye.
Mason votes aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley votes nay. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski aye.
Pawlowski votes aye. Representative Quam.
Nay.
Quam votes nay. With a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. The bill's on its way to the Ways and Means Committee. Members, as we started on the first bill, I didn't think we were going to get to this. But members, that's the last item on our agenda today. The next meeting is Thursday, March 24th. We have a couple election technical bills up, one of them being a possible vehicle bill. Representative Cleburne has a bill up, task force. And there's also the MMB's kind of supposed to be having a bill to us about the military pay differential. And with that, members, there aren't any further questions. Representative Quam, I was going to say, if there are any further questions, Representative Quam, you got a question.
Yes, Mr. Chair. That vehicle bill, are we talking a glove compartment or a trunk?
I usually think of the vehicle bills as a vehicles that you drive in, like a 72 Vega wagon or a 63 Volkswagen Bug. But that's kind of what I think about when I talk about vehicle bills. And for the public, they may not understand what a vehicle bill is. It's a bill that's usually something fairly bland that we set aside that on both House and the Senate. So we put our stuff together on that bill. And then as it moves forward, they match up when they get to when they get passed off the floor of the House and the Senate. And then they match, those numbers match up with the companion bill in the other chamber for conference committee. Then we use that as a bill to pass our bills from. So that's usually what I think about. I think about a vehicle being a car or a buggy, horse buggy. Anyway, members, any other questions? If not, we are adjourned for today. Thank you, members.